Welcome back to the Crooked Spine Show. Have you ever thought of giving back, of helping kids? This program called CASA, out of San Marino, which they're located in different regions, different cities and counties, allows people to become volunteers or advocates for foster children. Okay? Realize there's commitment involved, time-wise about 10 hours a month, which doesn't seem a lot, and also an interview process too and training process. At that point, you can help these children, which of no fault of their own, or ending up in these homes, sometimes have health issues or other things happen to them because of their situation. You can help them, as any parent would, get them to a healthier state and also a more successful state later in life and become more of a lifelong mentor for them. Also listen to Maggie and Caesar's personal story of being advocates for children and how they've connected with them, so there is an overall benefit, as you'll learn, for the volunteer as well as the foster child. All right, let's see if this works for you, something you'd want to do in the future or support this program. And again, the show notes has the full video if you want to watch it directly, if that's better for you, or even the podcast where you have the highlights there to jump to the specific topics you want to listen to. Let's listen in. Hi again, this is Dr. Tony. I'm new chiropractor Clint Upland. I also host the Crooked Spine Show here. I'm here at CASA in San Marino with Caesar and Maggie. We're going to go over what you guys do. I think it's very important to understand with children's health, and you guys deal with really the controlled chaos end of life, how what you guys do is how important for the community, for people around us to overall benefit to help kids in our area. So let's get started. So how long have you been doing this for?
I've been with CASA for a little over 4 years now.
Okay, for 4 years, what have you done for CASA?
So in the last 4 years, we actually grown a lot.
What does CASA do for
CASA? It's a national program. What CASA stands for is Court-Appointed Special Advocates. Okay. And what we do is we recruit, screen, train, and supervise community volunteers, just the average person who has a passion to want to work with children and really change a life. And so we guide them and we show them how to properly advocate and mentor youth in our foster care system. And our outcome and our goal really is to improve their lives, and that can look so many different ways. Anything from connecting them to siblings to having them think about their future and set goals and really be motivated about what tomorrow looks like and not just stay focused on what today is.
Good, good. And Maggie, what's your story? How did you join CASA?
I've been with CASA for about 11 and a half years and just kind of saw an ad in the paper, and it's kind of a good marriage of all of my different experiences and human resources, and I actually started my career working in a group home.
Okay.
And so just kind of came on board as an outreach person, and now I'm the outreach manager. And so my goal really and my role is to support my staff and to get out in the community and to tell people what our mission is. Okay. And what our vision is, and just to try to get more volunteers to help these children. We constantly have a wait list of children who are waiting for an advocate to become, you know, that person for them, to help them do all of the things that Caesar was talking about.
And a lot of it, I think, is when you look at the big picture of not just San Marino, but in general with CASA, what's the overall, I guess, purpose of CASA at a national level? Is it international or national?
National.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So the big purpose is we don't want any of our foster kids to fall through the cracks.
Got it.
And end up in a statistic, whether they end up homeless, in prison, addicted to drugs, alcohol. And so we just want to be a support system so that we help ensure that they have better outcomes and are just end up just like they are, great kids becoming great adults.
Well, every kid, I mean, from my perspective, have potential to do as well as they want to do.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And with that, as they get older, sometimes they're influenced by people around them, mm-hmm. by their environment, by their location, whatever it might be, and that can kind of sway them one way or the other.
Right.
What age groups do you deal with normally?
So our average age is about 13 years old,
okay.
So those tough teenage years, but
yeah.
We serve youth between the ages of 15 all the way to 21.
Okay. And then with that age group too, how does a child get involved in that program? What's their qualifications or what do you guys look for?
So first of all, in our county, there's about 5,700 plus foster children,
okay.
That are system involved that got removed from their homes because of abuse and neglect through no fault of their own.
Sure.
They didn't do anything wrong. Their parents or the caregivers were the ones that abused them or physically or neglected them. And so because of their safety, they were removed from their home and placed in care. And so now if you think about what happens to a young youth, a child, removed from everything they knew, for the whole life and get placed into a completely new environment. Of course they're going to shut down. Of course they're going to respond with not so great behavior. They don't have great coping skills or mechanisms in place.
They never learned anything.
They're right. They never learned anything. And so they're going to have some behavior challenges. And when they get referred over to us, it's after the fact, after they've been in care for a little over 2+ years, where the parents are no longer as involved, and so the court sees that the youth is falling through the cracks or is in danger of failing school or just needs that extra support system.
So you see them also, they're already declining in their education or their behavior, mm-hmm. so they're trying to find, hey, is CASA a way to kind of get them out of this?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so then we get the referral, and then what we do is we go out there and visit the youth. We do an assessment to see what some of their needs are, what's going on in their life, get a better understanding of what they need and exactly what's going on in their life. So then once we figure that out, our job is really to find somebody out there in the community who can really help them.
Okay. And when you go out and see them, the assessment per se, is it more behavioral? Is it more based on their grades, talking to their teachers too, or talking to the home itself? Or how does the assessment work?
It's a little bit of everything because our kids are very closed off, so having a stranger come over and asking them questions doesn't usually produce the best outcome.
Well.
Right, they're not going to tell me everything I want to know. So it takes a little investigating on the part of our advocate supervisors to go out into the field and really talk to both the group home, the social worker, the youth, and anybody else involved in the case to really get a good picture of what the youth is facing and going through. And then, unfortunately, we do have wait lists, so we put them on the wait list. It's a unique wait list because it's not first come, first serve.
Okay.
The way our wait list works is an eligibility list. So we have our volunteers that we go out in the community that we recruit. Once they're trained, they actually get to select the youth that they want to work with.
Oh, okay.
So they get presented with a couple of different case files based on some of their likes and commonalities, and they get to select the youth that they want to work with. So they open up the case file, they review it, whatever touches their heart, whatever they see that this is somebody that can really help, mm-hmm. that's who they select. And then we do a come together where both the youth and the advocate supervisor and the volunteer get to meet each other,
okay.
just to kind of kick it off. But it's challenging because, like I mentioned earlier, our youth are closed off. So it really takes, on average, about, I would say, anywhere between 2 to 3 months for them to really start breaking down those barriers to really get connected. And so we ask the commitment of our volunteers for a minimum of 18 months.
Okay.
Some people think it's a lot, but when you really look at it, 18 months for 10 hours a month is not
exactly.
a lot.
You're not there, not 10 hours a day.
Right, it's not a lot. Right. But the difference that it makes, it's a huge impact. Mm-hmm. All of our kids go through the ups and downs of everyday life struggles, you know, the happy days, the sad days, the good days, the bad days, mm-hmm. but they just need somebody on their side. Mm-hmm. And so what we do is we try to have that somebody be a champion for them.
And when you say they're a volunteer, what qualifies someone personality-wise, time-wise, age-wise, per se, to become a volunteer? What's the average, I guess, or what's the range of that?
I'll let Maggie answer.
Yeah, Maggie. One of the things that we want to make sure of,
yes.
Dr. Tony, is that we're getting the right people in the door.
Yes.
Our kids have been, you know, through a lot of trauma, and so we're really looking for people with passion, compassion for children, that can kind of stand the test of time,
yeah.
you know, through the 18 months, making it really all about the child and not about the volunteer. So we interview. We screen our potential volunteers over the phone. We meet them face to face. We watch them during our training program to see how they'll respond to the things that we're providing for them. Some of the things that we provide in training is just information on trauma.
Okay.
You know, we show videos, we give them information, we do role plays because we want to see how are they going to interact with these children when they're actually out in the field. Are they going to be able to handle this? And then from there, if they pass all of that, obviously.
What does that create? So it's more videos, mm-hmm. it's more interviews for one, two, role play you had mentioned too?
We do that. Okay. We do some lecture. We okay. bring in guest speakers with expertise to talk about things like the court system or education, just to kind of give them a well-rounded understanding of what a child in the system experiences is really what it's all about. And then once the volunteer gets through all of that, then they're connected with a supervisor who also mentors and coaches them to ensure that they're successful as they're working with their young person.
And a lot of it is when you're going through that, is there a certain age group of adults that would qualify? Is there a certain range? Or if you want to call it, are they semi-retired? Or do they have a family already? What do you see as the average volunteer?
That's a really good question.
Range of volunteer.
I mean, the neat thing.
I want to get people to understand, am I someone that might be possible?
Right.
I might
sure.
have the personality, but I'm not at the time commitment. So I want to give people an idea of what you actually look for. What qualifies someone so you're not wasting time, but you have people going through that would be mm-hmm. successful.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, this is something that Caesar and I talk about a lot, how impressed we are that our particular program, we attract all different types of people. I mean, our youngest person has been 21 because right. an individual does have to be at least 21 years of age okay. or older to volunteer with us. Our oldest has been 85. So we don't discriminate. We attract all different types of people, students, homemakers, mm-hmm. professionals. We've had doctors. We've had lawyers. We've had just full-time students, retired individuals, retired professionals, like I said, stay-at-home moms. You name it, we get it.
Yeah.
And really, that's if somebody could pass a background check and they have the time and passion for children, then, you know, we can sign them up to become a mentor for our children.
Great.
And that's basically kind of what we're looking for. So it's very broad. You know, we want people to come join us, obviously. I mean, that's we need people like you to come and become a volunteer for our children.
And then a lot of it is when you have that caring ability, mm-hmm. how do you serve somebody else? If you were a parent, how your parents or kids are grown, for example, how do you continue that characteristic in somebody else, and how do you make that commitment? Like you said, it's maybe 10 hours a month, correct?
Right. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem that long,
mm-hmm.
but how do you get yourself committed so you can help another child, and pay it forward and pay it forward mm-hmm. for one, if you've been helped before?
Right.
That's great. Good. How many of the foster kids that do go through and have success will come back and help out again?
That's a good question. Caesar, you want to answer that?
Like 4.5 people. No, do you see that coming around? You've been a few years now. Have you seen that come back around?
And we see it in a different way. Our youth that grow up, age out, they come back and serve as guest speakers or support some of our events, but not necessarily coming back as an actual CASA, at least not just yet.
Right.
Not just yet, but. But we've been around for about 30 years.
Yeah,
but, but we haven't seen that come full circle. Our hope and our goal is that we do see it come full circle, but we completely understand the challenges that a lot of our youth face, and to come back to give to a program like this, it might be more harmful than only because they would be reliving a lot of situations
yeah.
that they went through. So what they find that to them that's more valuable is being able to give back by speaking to youth or speaking to some of our donors or some of our staff to get a better picture understanding of what it is that they actually went through and how we can better help and support all the kids that we're working with now.
Great. And with that too, kids that do move on and graduate and get to the next level, what success have you seen with some of the kids that have gone through the program over the last 30 years?
Well, we've seen, we started tracking the grades not too long ago, but what we've seen is nationally about 56% of foster kids graduate from high school. Now, keep in mind that the youth that we're working with are the kids that have been pretty much people have given up on. So for
they
our
weren't meant to graduate, they weren't
right,
meant to make it.
For our graduation rate, it's about 71%, which
great.
Is great. And it just goes to show you what the power of one person really has to make a difference in a life. If we look at all of our lives and the people watching, we all made it because of people in our life
exactly.
that support us and helped us. And so if we provide that opportunity for all of our kids in care, they too can have a better outcome. They too can strive for something better and reach those goals. So it really just takes one person to make a difference in a child's life, and we've seen that impact year after year after year continue to grow.
And with that 71% too, how much of them go to college? Have you statted that yet too, and even beyond?
Yeah, so we have about 60% of the 71% that go to college.
Okay, great.
Granted, they're still going through challenges, but they have somebody they can count on.
It becomes more stressful, so you figure, okay, do I want to do the next level of stress?
Exactly.
Do I have the confidence and self-esteem to get there?
Exactly.
That's
and
great.
So if you think of parents who have kids, when does the parent say, I'm not your parent anymore?
Exactly.
When does the parent say, you're on your own, I can't help you anymore?
Yeah, I mean, I joke around, I'm like, hey, you're 18. Like, right. it doesn't stop. Bills or something.
It doesn't stop. It doesn't stop.
It doesn't. You become a guide for the rest of your life.
Correct. You know? And so that's what we're looking for, is those lifelong connections for our youth, because as they get older, they're still going to need somebody. It doesn't matter if they're 40, 50, they still need somebody they can confide in, somebody that can
just help. Advice.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it is, as we age, and I'm 44, I'm ancient, my kids tell me, a lot of it is, how do I use my experiences and pay for the next generation? And for my sense too, how do I continue to learn from my old generation from their experiences also? How do I continue to make my kids, for example, their lives easier by living by example or giving them advice, hey, I would do this or I would do this? And I think with like your program too, the volunteers, does it take 18 months to really get through a parent or a volunteer and child to get that bridge going? Or what's it usually take time-wise?
Well, every case is really unique and different, and every child is unique and different. So some cases, it may take up to those 18 months. Other cases, it could be within that first month that they break down, and just because of the connection they have, or just they realize that the volunteer generally wants to be there and support them. And it could be also that the youth is crying out for somebody to be there.
Got it. And how do you... And you said you kind of give the volunteer options, okay, who what seems a good fit for you. With that happening, does the foster child also have the opportunity to go, hey, look, it's a fit for me too or not?
Yeah,
or
they have a say throughout the whole process. And part of the assessment we do on both the volunteers and the youth is to try to do the best match possible when we introduce them, to see if it works. And then that's where they have assigned an advocate supervisor who kind of monitors closely to ensure that it's a good fit. If it's not, then we do our best to kind of ensure that the good fit happens.
Sure. Yeah. Sure, in that plan, it's not going to be successful all the time, we're human, but how do you make the overall program better that way? And after the assessment and the training of the volunteers, what are they not required to do, but what's that 10 hours a month actually include, or what's their normal program?
So the fun part of the program is you get to know a youth and really be involved in their lives. So you get to take them on outings. And then
what's that detailed outings like?
The outings, anything really that you're interested in. So it could be anything from hikes to a sporting event to out to the movies, just the everyday things that we take for granted, that a lot of our kids don't have access to because they're in care. Unfortunately, they can't go to the park every weekend. Unfortunately, they can't see the latest movie that comes out on Friday night. So that's where volunteers come in and really try to normalize things for them.
Okay.
And so that's the fun part. Then where the work really comes in is during all of these interactions with the youth, with the teachers, the social workers, they're collecting information. Because volunteers want to ensure that all the services that the youth needs or is in need of, that they have. So all this culminates in the court hearing. So all the volunteers attend the court hearings and they submit a court report to the judge. And this court report, what it is just letting the judge know everything that's happening in the youth's life, but also making recommendations. So a lot of times when our youth come into care, they're a part of a larger family, anywhere between 2 up to 5, 6 siblings. And so when they come in care, a lot of times they get split up, which is unfortunate. And they probably don't see each other like they used to. Yeah. Maybe now they see each other once every other month for 1 hour. And so when you're looking at the effects that this has on each child, it affects their school, it affects their everyday living.
Of course.
Because they're not seeing their siblings. And so one of the things that our volunteers strongly advocate is to ensure that connection is still there and is always there.
Good.
So by asking and recommending to the court that the sibling visitation be increased to more often.
Good.
It's not always possible depending on where they're at because of our the largest of our county. We're looking at the largest county in the nation.
Sure.
And so we have a lot of natural barriers, but that's what our advocates are there for, is to fight for them. If they need additional support in school or tutoring, if we're looking at alternative medicines, because a lot of our kids are unfortunately under psychotropic medication, and so we want to see if that's the healthiest way to help our kids. And so what we do is we talk to the doctors, we make sure that all other opportunities are explored for our youth to live healthy lifestyles.
And what does the state or the funding, besides the medical appointment and prescription medications, what else can it cover?
Well, in reality now, there's been some new legislation that passed that before jumping into psychotropic medication, that all avenues are explored.
Okay.
And that's only through a recommendation. So that's where our social workers, that's where our volunteers in the community really can step in and provide these resources for kids who may not realize that they're available, or for our volunteers or the community that doesn't realize that there's other methods of supporting our kids when it looks at wraparound services or looks at holistic medicine.
Is it going through the medical doctor then and going, hey, look, can we look at other things, and the medical doctor is kind of in charge of that, or is that more the advocate, or what? Who's in charge of that, I guess, referral?
It comes down to our social workers.
Okay, got it.
So when we get connected with social workers, we explore all avenues and opportunities before medication is assigned.
And what have you seen to work in the past with alternative medications, or not medications, but therapies or things like that?
Well, what we've seen is a lot of kids are exposed to a lot of trauma at a very young age, and they suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, and they have very few coping mechanisms. And so therapy has helped, but also therapy in conjunction with other forms of therapy, which can be play therapy, connecting them with their families and loved ones. So it's just there's a large spectrum out there that we still need to look into that we haven't really explored as far as alternative medicines for a lot of our kids. But the challenge that we do face is time. Every referral takes time to go through the process of getting approval. Mm. So it's not like a family out in the community who can go that same day and get serviced. That's our biggest challenge.
And that waiting period sometimes, too, can put someone in a worse condition and situation where now whatever they may have needed, now they need a more intense type of therapy maybe.
Possibly, yes.
Okay. Yeah. And with the medication use that you've seen with psychotropic drugs, what has the side effects been from that?
We see a lot of that, unfortunately. Okay. We hear a lot of it's in the school setting with children who can't focus. They're falling asleep at their desks. You know, they have problems, stomach issues because of the medications that are affecting them.
Okay.
They look like a zombie, spaced out. We hear this from our children as well, saying that it's just not working for us. One of the things that we really try to help our advocates to know, during training, we talk a lot about psychotropic medications, but awareness is really big. A lot of our kids don't know that they can ask for these things.
It's naive, so, they just don't know.
Of course. And so just training our advocates to help our youth use their voice, we've seen tremendous differences from that. You know, I heard about this one youth who was on 26 different medications just through different movements to different placements, different doctors, and the volunteers like asking the question, like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And then the youth's like, yeah, I've been trying to say something, and then allowing that vehicle of using the voice to reduce that and get the child on the things that he needed as opposed to the 26 different medications.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so is it a sense where the volunteer becomes more of a voice for the foster child also, when you understand that once you gain that trust, you actually able to get, okay, I'm dealing with this. And the child may say, hey, I don't sleep very well because I'm on this medication.
Right.
I have problems with constipation already because of this too. Because the academic deficiencies might be part of what are they taking, not their actual performance in the classroom.
Exactly.
That's great. Yeah. That's great to know. In the sense where people don't realize that.
Sure.
And even just with non-foster kids too, same thing. I see in my office, kids are sometimes put on medications that parents are not even being told you have options out there that have insurances on their own they can deal with. And some parents have to look beyond their medical doctor for like chiropractic or like physical therapy or like acupuncture, even essential oils, how to get my child to become more aware, how to get their body healthy. And as a parent, as an advocate, as a volunteer, being their voice allows them to be their guide
through
that process. Because I don't mean kids aren't meant to read medical books or go to medical school or be able to ask their doctor or their PA, hey, I shouldn't be taking this. Because sometimes the doctors, as I've seen too, they're like, okay, what are you on right now? Great, that feels good. Let's give you some more of that.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't work, let's give you something else.
Yeah.
So what I worry about is the abuse there, in a sense of form of malpractice, is how is this kid responding? Not if that didn't work, what else can we give them?
Right.
It's the alternative therapies that are becoming more pronounced. Even there's even things coming up, elections too, about not opioid treatments, but it's really sometimes not even the best option. So how do we continue to look at more options that keep the child healthy in a healthier state, not so over-medicated?
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, sometimes psychology, psychiatry can help, but what else can they do?
Right.
I mean, and how much is the physicality of the program getting into versus psychotropic drugs? Like exercise, things like that.
Hmm.
Is that usually recommended? Is that part of the program too, as an alternative to the medications?
Right. Well, you say the program as far as what ACOSTA does with the
ACOSTA's volunteers or whatever it might be, as an alternative to the medications.
You know, I know that a lot of our volunteers, because part of connecting with the youth is to do childlike activities. So we've had a lot of volunteers do things like hiking and basketball, and you know, physical activity has been very, very helpful for them to make them feel better, obviously.
Excellent.
I mean, I think getting them out of the house in itself is helpful, therapeutically speaking.
That stressor from them.
Absolutely, a different environment, getting some fresh air, being out in the sun, you know, doing those types of things. Those are some of the things that I've heard our volunteers do. How about you, Caesar?
Yeah, I mean, I myself am a volunteer as well, so I have a sibling set. And like Maggie said, some of the things that our kids just want to do is go out and ride their bikes,
mm-hmm.
you know, their skateboard, their scooter, go to the park and just relax.
Mm-hmm.
Things that they don't get to do often.
Mm-hmm.
So they enjoy being in the outdoors. A lot of times our kids, unfortunately, are given the TV or electronics in the home to kind of decrease some behavior issues. And so they're stuck doing that all day, and unfortunately they don't get to go outside and be kids and play. And that's across the board.
Doesn't matter if you're foster care.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's across the board.
San Bernardino County or Vermont
anywhere.
Somewhere. I don't know. Wherever. I'm just in Vermont. I don't know why. I don't know. I saw the radio this morning or something.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of it is how do you, and with play too, neurologically, the body relaxes better.
Sure.
Chemically, the body relaxes. Mm-hmm. There's more of a hormonal chemical balance in the body, so the kid can sometimes get off more medications and or do better in school and with other kids and in their environment and just feel better.
Mm-hmm.
So having that play mentality allows them to actually change their internal body chemistry to deal with the stress that they're dealing with. It's that's just science. So how do we promote that more and more through this program, CASA, but also other programs too, as part of a therapy, if you want to call it that, really not therapy, to get them to feel better and be better internally. And then maybe the medications can reduce. And then maybe their behavior can change.
Yeah.
Then maybe their schooling gets better because of all those things too.
Absolutely.
But it has to be, in my sense, looking just the program for about, what's about 10 minutes now, I think, 25 minutes, I guess, is how do you take all those things to, and the medications also, and have that balance, and how often do you reassess a child's mental aptitude, physical aptitude? Is it every month? How often does that occur? To see that difference.
Yeah,
it's ongoing. I mean, all of our staff and our volunteers monitor behavior, schooling every single month on a daily basis every time they meet.
Good.
Because they want to stay on top of anything that may happen or any triggers that may happen to try and support the youth and be there before things happen.
Great. And something can happen that day.
Right.
Is a foster child able to call their volunteers whenever they need to, things like that?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So become like almost like their parent to them in a sense where they're able to be there, hey, like I had this problem today. Do you have a quick minute?
Well, and that's one of the beauties of CASA itself and the program. Although it's a mentoring program like many other mentoring programs, it has that one component where all our volunteers are court appointed.
Yes.
So through the court order, they're allowed and have rights to be able to contact not just the youth, but anybody involved in the case on behalf of the youth.
Fantastic. And advice for that the youth can contact
the
volunteer and let them, hey, I have this, what's going on too?
Mm-hmm.
Good, good, good. What's the benefit to the volunteer? In their sense, what do they see after like 18 months or even longer than that too? What do they express as their, and yourself, Caesar, too, the overall benefit?
Yeah, I mean, for myself personally and for some of the volunteers that I've spoken to, it's just when you see your youth and you see a change over time, from not feeling confident about themselves, not smiling, to that day when they open the door and they give you a hug.
Yeah.
You know, when they're happy to see you, when they start on the car ride just chatterboxing all the way.
Yeah,
that. You
much.
Know you've made an impact when they feel that comfortable and they're open and they're happy and willing to speak to you. It's all those little things that make a big difference in their lives and in my life as well, because I see the difference that just my time. I mean, looking back at it, I am making a difference, but in that time, moment in time, I'm just there for him. I'm just there.
Just waiting.
Just like all volunteers, they're just there. And it's
as any parent does.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's great.
Well, I think it's just as a caring individual, too. You know, I look for myself. I served two young ladies, and the second youth that I served, I'm no longer her volunteer, but I'm going to be her friend forever.
Yeah.
I already committed to that. And just to be able to see her taking the steps of having the confidence to move forward in life is wonderful. I mean, she finally graduated from high school at 19, but she did it. You know, things like that where she felt like, I can't do this, it's too overwhelming. Just encouraging her and helping her to get connected to those people that can walk her through that, and right by her side, of course, being there, you know, as an advocate. That is very, very, I don't know what other word to use, but it's very pleasing to see that you know that you helped that person to do that. And not that, you know, this program's about us, it's not, but you can't help but benefit from that. You know, when you see that, like Caesar said, when you see them smile for the first time or reach out to you for the first time, it's like, this is really amazing that I've seen the progress that this young person's made.
And that's a touch, I think, that people don't realize, that you can actually help someone else and still get the personal benefit of, hey, like, I did something for someone.
Yeah.
That caring personality, that's just being human, helping another human.
Absolutely.
How do you not do that? You know, if you have the time and you qualify for that, just give yourself, like I said, it may not take 18 months, but can you give yourself the time to look, I'm going to work with this kid. He may even not even like me for the first 6 months, maybe 18 months.
Right.
But is there still someone I can reach in that process? Can I learn as an adult to be a better person by doing that? That's great.
And we do all the time. We hear this from our volunteers, and obviously I think we could both attest to this, that you know, we have learned so much from the young people that we served. I mean, they teach us so much. Would you agree with that, Caesar?
Definitely,
Good. And I think that's the key, is how do you, as talking to potential volunteers in this video, realize, hey, what is the overall picture? It's a win-win, probably a win times three times, because you're getting the benefit of sending your time with someone that can potentially become a better person and watch them grow up and do their own thing and get to a better state versus just dropping off the grid.
Right.
And I think that's huge.
It's big.
Helping one person, that person can help someone else and just keep helping other people. Like I said, why do you guys both, out of curiosity, work with two children versus just one?
For me,
I know the answer.
For me, I started off with one, and then found out that he had a sibling that didn't have a CASA, and I just right. And they're far away. They're like over 60 miles apart. But I see it as my duty and responsibility almost to make sure that they're connected.
Yes.
And so I wanted to ensure that they had each other in their lives. And so what better way than for myself, if I'm capable, and I was capable, to be able to bring them together.
It's only 60 miles.
Right, it's only 60 miles.
That's it?
Yeah.
How about you, Maggie?
Well, I served the two young ladies back to back. So I didn't serve them together, but I mean, it kind of almost becomes a little addicting to be able to reach out to somebody and to see them progress. And sometimes our volunteers don't see the youth progress, but they're planting the seeds, and that's addicting too, to know that, you know, somewhere down the line, this young person's going to flourish. And maybe I don't see that, and that's okay. But, you know, I help them to get to that place, and that's satisfying. It's very, very gratifying.
It's that compound interest effect where you just kind of let it sit there and just grow and grow and grow. Mm-hmm. Like I said, when you're ready, you're ready. When they're not, they're not.
You
can't, a parent of four kids, it's just something to where you can't control when they're going to have that moment.
Right.
And I'm like, I wish it would happen 5 years ago, but it's not going to happen. It may take a while. What other stories do you guys have that would benefit people to see?
Well,
in this video,
the most recent one, we had a youth who was having problems in school.
Okay.
Her volunteer really advocated for her, and she actually got an opportunity to speak on graduation day.
Wow.
And she thanked her CASA volunteer. And so, you know, other people are probably going, what the heck is a CASA?
Yeah,
but, you know, it's amazing, things like that. You know, I know Caesar has a couple stories too.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, our youth that graduate, they do acknowledge that they have people on their side working towards. But one particular story, one of our volunteers advocated for youth for probably over 7 years.
Okay.
And so the youth, what she did is create almost like a album of his childhood. And so nobody else did that for him. Nobody else has had that for him. And so looking back, he was able to see himself growing up. And who was there? His CASA was there, taking those pictures, putting those together. So if you can imagine that your childhood, or everybody can imagine their childhood, who does that for you? Someone that cares about you, puts all those pictures together, and helps you relive all those amazing moments. And so for him, that was an amazing time when he saw that gift. And what's interesting is, the particular volunteer, he was going to graduate, and his birthday, the youth's birthday was coming up, and so she wanted to come off the case. The reason why she wanted to come off the case was because she wanted to throw him a surprise birthday party. And so she came off the case, threw him a surprise birthday party after graduation, and they still stay in contact now. So now the relationship has evolved into something completely different.
An adult different.
Right,
adult
exactly, child. Exactly. Right.
That's great. Great. And any other stories in the room that someone want to talk about what they've gone through? Anybody else? Your story at all? Okay. and a lot of it is, how do you promote that more and more? And everyone's gonna be different. You can tell these benefits for people that are involved, but your experience, if and when you're a volunteer, I think you have to come in with an open mind. It's going to take time. You don't know when. The benefits, you have no idea. But that exciting event allows you to realize, hey, do you want to be part of that? Right. Where I'm going to have potential to something to happen or not happen.
Right.
But I can plant that seed. I can spend the time and energy for a minimum 18 months. Like you said, once you get addicted to it, you're like, I'm going to take on a whole family of families.
Right.
You know, because you see the benefit for you being, how do I become more caring, but also benefit for the child too, short term, and like I said, 7, 8, 20, 30 years later.
It's real exciting to know that you've helped a young person to be able to break those cycles also.
Yes.
You know, you see about this generational cycle of abuse and, you know, drug addiction and all of that, and then here comes somebody that's completely different, that's helping to show them a different way. And they're able to go to college and have a normal life. We've heard of kids getting married and having children, and you know, it's exciting to see that we helped them, and they did it themselves, obviously, with our encouragement and support, but they broke those cycles.
Well, it's amazing, and like you said, mentioned too, the generational drug addiction sometimes too. If a kid is just because they're naive, is told take medications for this, they get older, and same thing. If you break that and allow them to realize, I have other things I can do to deal with these stressors of my life and my body, and over time maintain that habit, their life becomes more open to everything around them.
Right.
I mean, going for hikes, if you go hikes with the girls you're dealing with right now too, is they see that as a way to relax, a way to enjoy life, enjoy to do things on their own, you know, and not sit in front of a TV or whatever it might be.
Right.
So it's good. Anything else to add for our first interview with CASA San Bruno today?
Yeah, I mean, we have a wait list of youth throughout our county, a wait list of over 220 children. So our goal, and we always talk about it, is to one day have a wait list of volunteers rather than kids.
That's
so
cool.
So if you think about it, 220 kids, and we have a large county, all we need is 220 volunteers to meet our need.
It's not a big number at all.
Right, it's not a big number. But just to remind our viewers that anybody can volunteer. You don't have to be a superhero. You don't have to be a millionaire. You don't have to be a famous sports player. All you have to have is the time and passion to really want to work with children. And that's what we can do.
And what is, and then Rami again, you may have mentioned before, what is a training period like? What does that involve?
Well, every volunteer gets 30 hours of training, and we break up our trainings differently.
Okay.
So it could be anywhere between 2 weeks to, you know, 4 weeks, but it's usually evenings, weekends to accommodate a working adult schedule. And sometimes we do hybrid model where some of it's online, some of it's in class, and some of the training sessions are all in class. So it just kind of depends. We put everything on our website so a potential volunteer can see kind of what the training schedule consists of and where it's going to be held.
So about 4 weeks of training, then boom, you get an interview with one of you. At that point, you get hooked up with a foster child for one, too, and kind of get things get ball rolling for one, too.
Yeah, we interview first, and then sure. we send them to the training afterward. Yeah.
Great.
So,
good.
Yeah.
You guys are on track. I'm going to put all the information you have about contacting your facility here and you individually, too, and put on your connect your Facebook, your website, everything to this video. So go on their website. Go give them a call. Really, just give you guys a call, right? That's
yes,
just talk to you,
yes,
not a robot on the phone.
Right.
Yeah, and
got
they
it.
Can also inquire directly through our website.
Good.
If they don't want to pick up the phone call or if it's midnight,
yeah,
you know, and they're
don't pick up either. Call me, buddy. I'll pick up the machine. Buddy Live is if you're interested in just knowing these guys for a few minutes now. How do you promote that and use that? Okay, what can I do now? Do I have to wait? What's a good time for me? But being involved in the program, even just not as a volunteer, can you stay involved somehow? What are the ways, if you can't volunteer right now, if you're just time-consuming, just way too busy, what else can you do for CASA?
Lots.
What's this lots?
So, obviously, there's different ways to support us. You can tell somebody about what we do. If you know somebody that might be a good match
okay.
for our program, you know, have them contact us. If you want to contact me, Maggie, or Caesar, we'll contact them. But yeah, we just call, you know, speak out campaign or word of mouth campaign to get the word out of the need
good.
For volunteers. Another way would be obviously to contribute to us
any
financially.
Fundraising? What do you guys normally
yeah.
do fundraising? What's the point
We actually
here?
Just had a fundraiser last
yeah.
week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we won't have any other ones this year,
sure.
but we hold at least three a year.
Okay.
So you could attend one of our events, obviously. That would be fantastic. We're always looking for sponsors as well. You can contribute out of your pocket. If you want to donate a monthly amount, it could be anywhere from a dollar all the way up to whatever your heart tells you to donate. If you have a vehicle, a car, a boat,
okay.
we're connected with Cars for Charities, and you can go on to their website, pick us as the charity of choice, and if somebody donates a vehicle to them, we get a check from that, and it's a great way to donate without taking anything out of your pocket.
Like get stuff out of your garage or your storage.
Yeah,
storage.
Right,
Done.
Right.
Good.
Yeah.
And also, too, with you mentioned just my own personal curiosity, where do the kids mostly go for me to do the hikes?
All over.
Okay,
I mean, and obviously, yeah, I mean, all over. And our kids reside all over, too, and
okay.
our volunteers really try to engage in those activities where the child lives.
And what is the, when you say San Bernardino County, where are most of the foster homes located where the kids would be?
So, so we have a lot in the high desert area, which encompasses Apple Valley, Victorville,
okay.
In that region, Adelanto, in that region up there. But we also have a lot in our central region, which is the city of San Bernardino,
okay.
Fontana, Rialto. But all of our kids are spread out all the way from the east end, going out to the desert, all the way to upland. So we're pretty much everywhere, and which is great for all our volunteers because we granted or guarantee that you'll have a youth within a pretty 20-mile radius of your area, making it convenient for a lot of volunteers. But we also ask them to, when they make the commitment, that chances are the youth may be moved. And so they
okay.
understand that we have a large county, so a youth may reside in Upland one day and a month later may end up in Victorville.
Okay.
And so that's
a challenge that we also face.
Mm-hmm. We do.
Okay. And then also realize, I mean, Upland and Ontario, they border LA County also.
Correct.
Is that okay to go across county lines mm-hmm. to volunteer?
It is.
Riverside
it is.
County also too?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah. So our youth get placed out of county as well.
Okay.
So we ask our volunteers to stay connected with them.
Great. Good. Anything else for our first video? Anything else to add?
No.
So I'll put all the information on the website, that point on the YouTube channel too. That point you find ways to volunteer directly, refer a friend, donate, or find a way to sponsor the program too. It's phenomenal. So thank you guys.
Thank you, Dr. Tony. Really appreciate it.
like the golf clap from the back too.
Hope this talk gave you the exact details of how CASA works. As an advocate, you worry about, as any children, if you're a parent for one too, child's health, child's mental state, and also physical state. This program helps you help a child who's a foster child, again, no fault of their own, to get them to those better states so you feel better too about helping somebody else. Realize Caesar and Maggie, I didn't know this beforehand, they're both advocates too. When you become part of the program, you become part of the program. You actually enjoy that benefit too. You see the kids grow up over time, become better adults, better people, and over time they come back to thank you because they are grateful for your work. All right, something you want to do, if not, let other people know too. That point, realize a child's health starting at these ages, as young as they are, can affect them the rest of their lives, all right? So, and as adults too, can we help them get to that better point if we're in that position, all right? So hope you enjoyed this video. Again, the FBATS show notes at the very bottom has a full video of this along with other podcast videos. We'll do your feedback in at the end of the video or at the end of the show notes do we have that feedback on iTunes or Facebook. So hope you enjoy this and all these talks too. Have a great week and live a simple, healthy life.